love this episode with Zoe Ajanya, who I met some years ago when I was in London. She is the author of the cookbook, Ghana Food. We're talking all about food activism, diversity in food, and hard boundaries, which frankly, I need to learn a little something about. Take a listen, definitely subscribe, and let me know what you think. It's Terry from No Crumbs Left, and I'm very excited to have amazing, not blogger, right? Author, restaurateur, foodie extraordinaire, Zoe Ajanya from the UK. Welcome.
Hi, yes. Thank you, Terry. I'm not a blogger, but
right.
I could be. But I'm everything else that you suggested. Yeah, I'm a chef and a writer, and I am engaged in food activism and diversity in food. Yeah.
I'm very
happy to be here, by the way. Thank you so much. You've been very generous over the whole year, actually, on Instagram, messaging me and supporting Ghana Kitchen and supporting whatever I'm up to. So it's nice to be connected and see your face. And thank you very much for having me.
It's completely my pleasure. I met you because I came a few years back. I think it was 3 years ago. It was before I did my book. And I came with Michael from Symmetry Breakfast, and we met up for a week. And we went to the, I think it was like the BBC Food Show, and he introduced me to you, and I got to try your food. And so much of what you do, I think, is kind of naturally gluten-free. So for me, it was kind of like delightful.
Yeah, gluten isn't a big part of West African diets, actually. It's very easy for me. Like, I didn't even realize how much of my food was vegan. Not that I didn't realize, but I didn't realize I wasn't tapping into the marketability of that plant forward, that vegan, that gluten free side of what I was cooking until quite late, actually, until everybody was going on about, you know, when it became, I guess, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, when dietaries became really important and more people were talking about it and stuff. And I was like, oh, hang on a minute. All my stuff's vegan and gluten free.
Right?
Let me talk about that. Yeah. But yeah, inherently, you know, that's part of what Ghana Kitchen stands for, is kind of dispelling as well, like these kind of, you know, maybe stereotypes or misconceptions about what West African food is. And it's been my pleasure and privilege to, you know, highlight how amazing those ingredients and flavors are and just show people how diverse that food is and how plant forward it is, actually, a lot of our diet. So, yeah, I was happy to feed you.
Well, it was absolutely delicious. I immediately got your book, have watched you. It's been fun to see what's happened with your account because, of course, we've been in this year that's been challenging. Yeah. But also what I see is that you have been really shouted out, celebrated. You know, everywhere I go, there's something happening about you. So that's really been a lot of fun to see in this year that's been challenging, that there are some amazing things also going on for people. So tell us a little bit about your food and what's it about and what this year has been like for you.
Yeah, so I'm known for cooking. Basically, my food brand and business, or one of them, is called Zoe's Ghana Kitchen, and that's the cookbook is by the same name. And I came to that cuisine because I'm half, my mother's Irish, my dad's Ghanaian, so I'm the result of those continents colliding. And, you know, food became, you know, when I was very, very young, both my parents were immigrants to the UK, and food, I developed an awareness from a very, very young age about, you know, how important food was as a translation and connection to home. That was evidenced most frequently by my mum receiving care parcels from Ireland that my grandmother would send, of like, you know, lovely soda bread that she would make, and Galtee cheese and like Tato crisps and things like that. But on the reverse side, my dad would like come home with, you know, very, very different types of ingredients, much more pungent and strange looking to a 7 or 6 year old kid, you know, things like fermented maize dough or corn dough, which is kenkei, things like shito, which is a traditional hot pepper sauce made with smoked crayfish. It's a bit like an XO sauce or a sambal, and tilapia and smoked fishes. Like, you know, there's just this abundant supply of amazing, interesting smells, textures and flavors. And I connected, whilst I could see that like my dad was using that cooking process to go home to Accra, I wanted to have a bit of that really, because I had no access to Ghanaian culture or ancestry, because we didn't have any Ghanaian family in London. And my dad is very, and still is, a very laconic man. He doesn't talk much. He's not a big sharer. So my investigation started with the food and, you know, went on to turn into me fighting the universe. The universe was trying to make me cook this as a living, and I was very much fighting that for a while. And then in 2011, I decided to comply with what the universe wanted. So it then became about, you know, sharing what I loved about this amazing food and ingredients and the culture primarily, actually. I think that gets lost sometimes in the story, that it was always about celebrating the continent of Africa and sort of revisiting the lens on what is Africa, what is, and doing it through food. You know, I'd grown up in the 80s with a really negative stereotype in the media about the continent of Africa, which was very much based around poverty, famine, war, and kind of implosion and destruction. And that's just like, you know, my journey, my relationship with the continent, obviously through Ghana primarily, wasn't like that. You know, it's like my research into it was vibrant, rich culture. It was amazing flavor and food. It wasn't about, so, you know, the journey, I guess, with Ghana Kitchen has started there with trying to reshape the narrative around what African food is and introduce it to people and get a conversation going. And, you know, this has been an incredibly bizarre year, yes, up and down, left and right. And, you know, a big part of what Ghana Kitchen did was a catering business and hospitality. So obviously, you know, that got knocked on its head quite substantially. And my response to that initially was to do a crowdfunder and create a community kitchen for helping vulnerable people in my community and feeding key workers and things like that. And, you know, over that initial period of lockdown, you know, my original sort of business model was crumbling and collapsing in a way, but it was allowing space for me to consider this bigger idea about decolonizing food and like changing the business model to more uplift that conversation, you know, because a lot of people, you know, honestly, the conversation around West African food had moved on quite a lot from 10 years ago when I started. You know, there was a lot more other West African food businesses. There's a whole new raft of West African fine dining here in the UK now. So the conversation has moved on somewhat. So, you know, my conversation is now going on to a bigger idea of, okay, well, what's behind some of the problems of diversity and inclusion and equality in the world? And I'm just trying to address some of that, I guess, with opening a spice shop and having transparent supply lines with, you know, those producers, and bring that wealth directly back to Africa is, I guess, part of the new mission statement now. But it's still about celebrating all of the amazing flavours, you know. But it's also about encouraging people to bring those flavours and ingredients into their everyday and not just think of it as like, oh, I can only use that if I'm making a Ghanaian dish. And it's more about being a little bit more expansive. Let's play with these amazing flavours. Let's introduce them in new ways to your kitchen and excite your larder and your taste buds and your palate. And take you on an adventure while we're at it. Why not, you know?
I love it. I love it. I love this idea of doing food field trips, taking people on a journey, whether it's in my kitchen to make a roast chicken or going, you know, to the Middle Eastern store where that has beautiful spices and, you know, shining a light on that. And I think that's, you know, one of the things about being a foodie that is really so much fun. Where has it taken you this year? What platforms and how and where have you had that opportunity to share? And how has that changed you, you know, internally? How has that felt?
Yeah, I mean, I've been so, it almost feels, there's almost a bit of guilt to say it, but like, I know this has been such a horrible year for so many people, but there's been so many gifts for me in this pandemic, you know, and I already spoke briefly about that space that I got from not having to work 18 hour days, you know, and it gave me this space to think and create again and kind of re-center and get back in touch with my higher, you know, my spirituality and dive into, you know, this deep self growth and stuff. I've been very much focused on me actually a lot, but at the same time, I've had these amazing opportunities to talk to people. So authentically communicating and sharing ideas has been a big part of 2020 for me. So I had the opportunity to actually, you know, Cherry Bomb actually, did their Jubilee online, and I, you know, Clancy Miller interviewed me for that, and it was such a lively, engaging conversation. And I after we had that chat, I said to Clancy, that was like really fun, like why don't we do that more regularly? And so we decided to put that basically it turned into me hosting a Sunday kind of conversation on For the Culture at For the Culture Food Magazine on Instagram. So I did these live IGs with Black women in hospitality and food, and I got so much out of that. You know, the stories that were so enriching and uplifting, and of course there was a lot of sharing of, you know, bad experiences, but the unity that came from sharing the bad experiences was really enjoyable, you know, and just giving that space and platform for people to have the conversation and talk about what's difficult and what's to be rejoiced about as well was really great. And it kind of triggered something in me again that I'd kind of forgotten over the last 10 years, being like this focused entrepreneur chef person, which is I really love talking to people. I really love communicating. I really love hosting things and, you know, finding out what people, you know, what makes people tick, what, you know, but also introducing like big questions and like talking about difficult subjects. And so I'm kind of speeding through this because I've had so much that's happened this year, but, you know, part of this, the big moment of this year was co-founding Black Book as well, which is like this platform for promoting inclusivity and diversity in the food industry. And, you know, and that came together off the back of 10 years experience of working in food, not just this year, but it happened to coincide with it, the next massive iteration of the Black Lives Matter movement, obviously, that happened earlier in the year. And I got to host, you know, an 8-week series of talks with this amazing, incredibly talented panels from around the world, you know, talking on subjects about, you know, things like the problems that BIPOC people have in recipe writing, in visibility, and, you know, all of, there's so many, we don't have time for me to go into all of that, but, you know, it was just a very uplifting, enriching experience, and doing lots and lots of this, you know, talking on podcasts, lots of interviews and panels and stuff like that. So I've just been enjoying, I guess, being more of myself, being more of my authentic self in, and showing all of the different aspects of who I am and what I care about, but still kind of filtering it through food, but I guess showing people what else is behind me and behind my ideas and my thoughts. And, you know, what, I guess maybe that's what people like, is you talked about my Instagram account growing considerably. And of course, you know, a big part of that was that knee-jerk reaction after BLM Black Squares posting over Instagram and people jumping on following Black people randomly, which felt very weird and confusing and difficult, right, of course, honestly. Right. And, you know, but, yeah, I mean, that's just a whole other thing to unpack. And then I got a whole load more followers because I took over Nigella Lawson's Instagram account. She was very, very generous, actually, to give me that opportunity, especially me, because, you know, I'm foul-mouthed, I'm very much myself, you know, and, you know, Nigella is a very serene, gorgeous, you know, epitome of femininity and control and all of that, and I'm a bit more, wah, you know, so for her to give over her Instagram account and to do it so generously, and she gave me, like, full carte blanche as well. Like, I think her PR team are probably a bit more scared than she was, but we spoke on the phone and she basically said to me, you know, just post whatever you want, and if people are idiots, block them and delete them and do what you want. And I did, you know, and I took the opportunity to really take advantage of, you know, her many millions of followers and sort of really ram down their throats things that I care about, like West African ingredients, you know, talking about Black Lives Matter, talking about politics, talking about Black Book. And in many ways, you know, that kind of launched, let's say, my Instagram 2.0. It was around the same time where it wasn't just about food anymore. It was more about, look, here are all the parts of me. If you don't like it, it's fine. You can leave. But this is who I am. Do you know what I mean? And this is actually, it's important that everybody understands all the aspects of me. It's like, I'm not just a person that cooks Ghanaian food. So, and also, like, what drives me to do that? Because politics plays on some level or other, you know, it's really impossible for me to extricate politics from anything that I do, given that I'm the daughter of two immigrants who had very challenging times in this country. You know, growing up working class is a very lively class system at play in this country. And, you know, being a lesbian, right, being gay,
right,
being mixed race and black mixed race, that all of those points of intersectionality really inform my thinking, inform what I care about, and inform my cooking ultimately. So that's why, I don't know. And, you know, so, you know, I have got a lot of more followers. and I can thank Nigella and Black Lives Matter for that. But also I think there's just, I've also lost a lot of followers, honestly, because not everybody cares about what I care about, you know.
Right, okay. Right, absolutely. Fine. Well, I like that you're foul-mouthed. I mean, I think that's great. And it's been fun to watch you this year and see, you know, how that's all unfolded. And there is just like, you're so much like sort of joy and passion. And it's been really fun just to, on the gram, to sort of, you know, be a part of. I, you know, was deeply impacted just by the Share the Mic Now platform in general. And I made my way through every single one. You know, I kept the list and went back and watched all the, you know, the lives and any that had been saved, and read all the posts and looked at all the accounts. And it was, you know, it was an incredibly, you know, incredibly cool. They were going to do a Share the Mic Now too. And I was invited to be a part of it. And I was excited. And then they found that some of the women, that some of it hadn't worked as beautifully as it had for yours. So they took a pause on doing the second one. But it's been, you know.
Can I just say, actually, Terry, thank you for mentioning that that takeover was part of Share the Mic, because we have to give credit there, particularly to Dr. Leslie. God, what's her name? Oh, Leslie Hall, Dr. Leslie something. I feel like she's got a hyphenated name. It's horrible that I'm forgetting it right now. But she runs a dinner series called Iconoclast in the States, which is, she's created a platform that celebrates, you know, Black talent in food, actually, at the highest level. And that's how I know her and met her. But so she is the person that selected me to be in that Share the Mic Food and Bev campaign. And she went, yeah, she didn't have to do that because, as you know, that campaign was very much a states-based campaign. But, she, you know, as a UK chef and somebody who's like between New York and London, she included me, and I'm very grateful because, yeah, it was an incredibly high-profile campaign. And, you know, such amazing talent, A, to get the opportunity to have the mic, but and also the generosity of the women that gave the mic was incredible. And I really hope to have seen a bit more of it, to be honest. I've seen some kind of weaker versions of it a little bit here, but.
Well, there's definitely a way to go back and trace it, because the first one was, you know, in America, and it was like Lovey and Glennon Doyle and, you know, some, a couple of other women. And then it, you know, worked out that it went to all of these other countries, but you can go back to the beginning. And, you know, for me, my Malik Teal is a woman who I follow and met and are friends with. I was, you know, she was doing it. So it was like, I started with, well, of course I want to see what my Malik has to say. And then I was like, well, I want to see more. And then I was like, well, I actually want to see all of them. Yeah. But it was, you know, it was pretty amazing. So do you think, where does knowing your worth come into all of this?
Yeah, it really does come into it. And do you know, I can't answer that fully yet because, I mean, look, I've been on a beautiful journey my whole life. I've been on an intense, beautiful journey the last year in particular. Knowing your worth does come into it because you have to be able to take the opportunities, right? You have to be able to say yes to, and to know what the right opportunities are, and to have the confidence to take them, and then to do whatever the opportunity is as fully authentically yourself as you can, right? And that is like coming into self, coming into purpose. And yeah, you know, I'm trying all the time to turn up as my best self, to turn up as my most authentic self, and hope that in doing that, whoever I'm talking to or relating to will come as, you know, their best self and all of that. It's a journey, right? This is the journey of life, to keep improving upon and developing our best selves. And, you know, the question of knowing your worth, I mean, I still question it. You know, I'm talking to my therapist this morning and I think I've really got a block around success. and, you know, and I'm okay to admit that because it's the truth, right? I think we all struggle sometimes with confidence. I think we all struggle with self-esteem and self-worth. But what I what's been helping me is I've built in this really solid foundation of my personal practice every morning. And I have a routine that involves journaling and affirmations and meditation and exercise. And I've got some hard boundaries around that. And that is what's helping me to, and keeping it in the day, right? Not getting wound up by the past and mistakes from the past, forgiving myself for any mistakes I made and other people. And also not looking too far into the future and just trying to, you know, be as keep it in the day as much as possible and be the best person I can every day. But it isn't without challenges for sure, because life is life and it gets in the way and it's a roller coaster. But yes, I mean, self-worth is the goal. And I have a good enough amount. But there's always room for more. That's what I'm going to say.
We'll be right back with more No Crumbs Left Table Talks. This podcast, Lusty, is brought to you by Room and Board. And I love, you know, on the book tour, I loved being there. I sort of love the whole brand. There's the American made, you know, a lot of sort of local purveyors, sustainable materials, things that are timeless. But beyond that, they have just beautiful, timeless things that just kind of make my day better. And I'm not kidding.
Okay. Being on the book tour at Room and Board was so much fun. The furniture is gorgeous, first of all, but on a secondary thing, like the people that work there are just the greatest, nicest people on earth. You're kind of like, how are these people so nice? What could possibly make a person so nice and kind? But well, all those people work at Room and Board.
Let's go. I'm back with Zoe, and we're talking about not only your cookbook, Ghana's Kitchen, but your spices and knowing our worth. You know, I mean, I think there is that thing, and let's hope we're all working on that. You know, just what is living my best life? What does that look like? You know, how can I be myself authentically, whether people like it or not? You know, and certainly for bloggers, you know, people have an idea. They want us to be a certain way, look a certain way, talk a certain way. I'm never necessarily that person. And so for this year, that's also been like for me stepping out in ways where people are like, no, but I, you know, like the other day, oh, there was this incredible, it was an incredible Instagram post about a man that came out and he was about to come out and his father, you know, heard him. And basically the father wrote a note saying, I'm glad you're out. We're out too. We've always known that you're gay. We love you. And, you know, what we hope is this person you're with loves you too. And, you know, I have a queer daughter and I shared it on Instagram because I thought it was like unbelievably beautiful. And some woman said, I only want you to talk about food. And I was like, there's so many wonderful people that only talk about food. I'm not one of those people. You know, I noticed on your account, you share about your children because that's something you're passionate about. And something, you know, about my pages, I share about things that I'm passionate about. And this is something that I am, you know? So it's like, you know, stay, leave, whatever. And it's okay to feel that way and still stay, but I'm still going to be who I am. And you know, part of the year is definitely for me is just like, I'm going to stay in my lane. There's always that temptation, you know, kind of looking at all the other lanes, but it's like, I always know, like, you know, what I related to that you said earlier is just, you know, for me, it's like, I can't go too far in the future or too far in the past. It's like, I just got to keep doing what I know to be the next right thing. But I do struggle with this idea of like, everyone has all these personal practices. I feel like I just get up and work all day and then work myself into the ground. So like, is it a challenge to do all of that? I'm thinking about doing it.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. This was me up until basically, I tell you what happened to me. I was this hustle and grind human, right? I thought entrepreneurship meant hustle, 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 grind, grind, grind. And it was this mindset of if it's not hurting, you know, then it can't be working. Or this, it seemed to me that a certain amount of pain had to be endured and a certain amount of very hard work had to be endured before you could get to this success, whatever success looks like, right? But so that meant I was, you know, for the last 10 years, pretty much since I started Ghana Kitchen. And, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs do this, right? You have a great idea. You want to make it work. You want to get it off the ground. So you're putting everything into it, right? You're working 10, 12, and then 14. And then when in hospitality, you know, in catering, in a restaurant, it's normal every day to be on your feet for 14 hours. When you're also running the business, then you're like, you know, you're working outside of that as well. When I was writing my cookbook, I was doing a 14-hour shift, coming home at midnight, writing till 3 a.m., getting a couple of hours and getting up and going to the kitchen in the morning. You know, that was my life up until I ended up in hospital in September last year. And I just finished, because, you know, Ghana Kitchen did mobile catering. So we did street food and festivals as well as supper clubs and all the other things we did. So I would go around the country to, you know, trading at festivals on no sleep, back and forth, blah, blah, probably drinking all day because it's a festival, not eating properly. You know, I was running myself into the ground ragged, really, in the pursuit of what? Fill in the blanks, you know. And I ended up in hospital with suspected meningitis. And, you know, they thought I was dying. They really thought I was dying and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And it was just my immune system had collapsed, essentially. So I was in intensive care for nearly 10 days. And
wow,
while I was there, I was like, what the actual... fill in the blank, you know, like, what am I doing? Like, what, how did I get here? Like, is this even what I want? You know, and it was that, and you know, we have two ways of growing, right? You can either grow through pain, which is, you know, is a good and worthy way to grow. That's what the human existence is about, right? The soul's journey is the struggle to know itself. And so there is a certain amount of pain and struggle to be endured for that growth that is, because sometimes that's how fast, that's the fastest way to get the growth, you know, but there's other ways to grow. And I think in Japanese culture, it's either Satori or Kensho, right? So there's one that's through pain and there's one through sort of self-growth and self-development. And I decided, you know what, I'm kind of done with the growth through pain part now. So let's try another version of that. And it was a case of me really, really like taking broad, broad view of like, what, okay, where can I get some spiritual guidance? And it was a lot of reading. It was a lot of audio books. It was a lot of podcasts. It was a lot of reading. And then, you know, I just started picking and then I started to sort of play with meditation and get into that, which was really difficult at first because a lot of it is just your mindset. Cause it's just like, oh, I'm not doing it right. Like I'm supposed to have this or I'm supposed to have that. Actually, it's all really, really simple. It's much more simple. And the magic is in the simplicity of it, you know, because all you're doing is making time to be with yourself, right? And sit in it and be comfortable sitting in that space. You know, you're just carving out a little bit of space for yourself. And that could be a 10-minute meditation, or it could be an hour meditation, or it could be the 2 hours that I take in the morning. I build in all these other parts around it. But, you know, for me, finding this practice, and it is constantly evolving, it changes and I tweak it all the time, right? Because life changes every day and every week and every month. But all of that is to say that, you know, there's not one solution that fits all, I don't think. So I think it is a question of feeling it out and trying out different things. And it's just a case of practice, right? Like anything that needs to get done, you know, doesn't happen magically out of nowhere. There's little steps that have to take you there, right? So even something as basic as going and getting your groceries involves a recce of the fridge or a cupboard, what's in there. And then you're probably going to write down a list of those things, right? And then, you know, you plan how you're getting to the supermarket or whether you're doing an online. Yeah. My point being is that there's lots of little steps and stages that get you to have your shopping in your stocks, right? And that's life. All of the parts of life, all of the parts of, you know, any big thing that you want to change as well. It's really important for me to understand, because I'm one of these people as well that want change really quickly. You know, like if I know there's a solution, it's like, oh, right, what's the fastest way for me to get to that solution? But it's not about that. And when it comes to self-growth and that spiritual journey, it's understanding that it's a mindset shift. It's about a new kind of awareness about yourself, which enables a new awareness about the rest of the world and humans around you, which enables you to be interact with it in a different way, which will, for me, is much less stressful, much more fun, much more love-based, much more, you know, I'm it's from a place of abundance instead of scarcity. It's from a place of, you know, and all those shifts have been built up by small incremental practices. It's like the building up of the meditation muscle. It's the building up of you know, the routine and setting the boundaries and keeping the boundaries around that routine and making it unequivocal, you know, for myself and therefore for everybody else. And it's just something that really roots me in the day. And like, and I really, encourage everybody who struggles with overwork and burnout and things like that is to, it's so important to take that time to breathe and think about the mess of it, like, because you can be in the chaos and suddenly lose track of where you know the journey might have gone down the wrong road and you haven't been paying attention to the signposts, you know. So it's really important to pay attention to the signposts of where you're going. You know, like, you write a business plan and you're supposed to check in on that, right? And people should have some kind of plan for themselves, their personal development, their personal goals, and, you know, is it all in track? Does do both these things make sense together? Are they all working to take me where I want to go, you know? So I think that was a very long answer, but it's a process that's ongoing and will change and develop, no doubt. But it starts with just starting, really, like anything. I know that anybody wants to hear. I'm still, when somebody says to you, I used to hate it when people said to me, like, giving up smoking, I'd be like, how have you done it? And they'd be like, I just stopped. And I'd be like, oh, that's such an annoying answer.
But I don't think you gave us an annoying answer. I mean, I think it was a real process for you and you took in a lot of new information because you knew you have to put something new in to get a new result.
Yeah.
And you created a practice and, you know, change is small and you did it little by little. You know, it's like people say, how do you learn to cook? I mean, it's like, you've got to begin, and it does begin with a grocery list, and practice makes perfect. And it's about failing along the way also. And, exactly. You know, all of that. I know that you're working on another book, or you have another book coming out. So just tell me a little bit about that and what the process has been like.
I am working on another book, but the book that's coming out in February is a relaunch of Zoe's Garner Kitchen in the UK. Sorry, the States just got a reprint of the old book. The old book is getting a relaunch in the UK in February with a new cover and a new introduction. That said, I am working, I've submitted some treatments to my agent for some books, and I'm hopeful that one of them will get picked up early next year. Yeah. I don't know if I can, I'm not sure if I can talk a lot about it, but basically as I've kind of hinted to already, like, I'm a big fan of the continent of Africa. So I want to basically, you know, I'm not like a mega famous celebrity or anything, I'm obviously, but I have something of a platform. And I think what I'm most focused on now is using my platform to raise the profiles of, you know, other people who don't have the platform, right? So I really want to celebrate African chefs in the diaspora and on the continent of Africa. So that's what my next book is about. It's about celebration of, you know, 10 years ago, I wrote on the back of my, you know, when I started Garner Kitchen, I wrote that, you know, I talked about an African food movement, a revolution that was going to happen. And I feel like I kind of, you know, when you like set a vision that,
yeah.
and I feel like the vision has come true, right? Because we have, this is happening in the States, in the UK, across the world. There is now a huge number, hundreds and hundreds. When I started, there was a handful of people who thought like me about West African food, right? Who thought beyond what already existed and was trying to think about what might be next. Now there's hundreds of us. And I really want to celebrate all of those people, all of those voices, all of those 54 countries of cuisines. And you know, do what I've done for Ghana in terms of that celebration, but give other people the opportunity to do that for their country.
That's amazing. And I think it's important to say you had an intention, you put this down, this thing has happened, and that your intention was part of the movement that created this. And I hope you can take that in and know that to be true. You know, there are moments where we do something and I do something and I later know I was a part of this thing. You know, this intention I created, this seed was a part. And so fully I feel that. And I just want to acknowledge that.
Oh, thank you. That's, I mean, I feel that how you said this. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there was a part of me for a while that used to be like resentful, you know, because I don't know if I'm oversharing, but you know, I'm pretty candid, but you know, when you're the first or people label you the first, right? there's a lot of walls you have to break through. There's a lot of ceilings that need to get smashed. There's a lot of like education. There's a lot of extra things that go into to doing the thing, because you have to give context. You have to give, you know, a rationale for why what you're doing is important. You have to explain what it is you're doing. You have to explain the country's culture. There's so much more to do. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And when there was a part of me, I suppose, that was conflicted early, like in the mid stages, you know, like around 2016 or whatever, 2017, because it was like I had worked so hard to give myself profile. And then I was seeing all of these younger businesses come up and not having to work quite as hard as me, and then maybe stealing my menu and stealing my recipe.
Yes, I know about that.
And that was a bit difficult for me for a minute, but that was from a mindset of scarcity, right? It was from a mindset of being in a space in a food industry, me knowing that they're only going to give one of us space at a time, because the fight for that space was real. You know what I mean? And I'm so glad to be out of that mentality and to have gone back to where I was before I had that mentality, which is very much more about uplifting, community building. And it helps that there is a shift in consciousness in the food industry around this stuff, honestly, because it's been so long coming and needed, that now there is a bit more space, you know, and there is a bit more recognition, and we don't have to be climbing over each other to get that spot for attention. And there's enough of us now, I think. I mean, it's really hard to talk about levels of influence, and because what does that mean? I don't know. Right. But there is enough of us now, and by us I mean Black chefs, mm-hmm. or BIPOC chefs, with enough of a platform to be able to be generous with it, you know. And, you know, that's not for everybody, but it's certainly what I want to do. Like, you know, the whole point of Ghana Kitchen, it wasn't about, I didn't start it so that I could be some kind of celebrity guru on what is Ghanaian food. That really wasn't what it was about. It was about uplifting and uplifting a continent and what people's ideas of the food from that continent might be, and then a gateway to the culture through the food. And it was always about a much bigger conversation. And I've had the blessing of the last year to come back to that, you know, come back to why I got into this and why I started it. And I'm very grateful.
Well, it's been so lovely to have you on. Tell people, like, where's the best place to find you? Do they come over to Instagram, or what do you, first of all, get your book, of course. Yes. And if you can get it from a Black-owned bookstore or a small bookstore or a local business, you know, in every situation, let's support local for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Please, if you can find independents, find them. I know that Kitchen Arts and Letters in New York has it. I think Omnivore Books is getting it in San Francisco, and I'm sure there's more up and down both of those coasts. I think Barnes & Noble has it as well, the reissue. Please support Zoe's Ghana Kitchen wherever you can on the internet. And me, at Zoe Ajonia, Instagram is the best place for me, really. All of me is on Instagram. Not all of me is everywhere else. So that's the best place to find me, at Zoe Ajonia. ZoeAdjonyoh. And my business, Ghana Kitchen, at Ghana, GHANA Kitchen.
And they can come over. We'll be sure to tag you when we put it on Instagram and when we put it in Friday Favorites and all of that. What a pleasure. Thanks so much. I think it's such a miracle to think, you know, we used to do this, Joe and I, in a studio in Chicago. Now Joe is in California. Wow. I'm in Michigan. You're in London. We're doing this all virtually. You know, none of us have fancy equipment. And that is, you know, that is a blessing from this year. I would have wanted to have you on the podcast, but it wouldn't have been possible. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad that I got to meet you even briefly when I did, got to have your food, you know, got to rediscover you this year. And, you know, thanks for being who you are and being your authentic self and just the difference that you make and shine on the planet. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's really nice. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's really nice. And it's really nice to have this kind of conversation where it's not so like inflexible. And do you know what I mean? It's nice to have a flowing, open conversation. I appreciate that.
Thanks everybody for being here. Come over and find me on Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, the blog, and definitely subscribe here on the podcast and join us as we continue.